This is Louise Hay, and I'm going to read to you my book, The Power is Within You. There is a great deal of information on this tape. Do not feel you have to absorb it all at once. Certain ideas will leap out at you. Work with those ideas first. If I say anything that you disagree with, just ignore it. If you can get just one good idea out of this tape and use it to improve the quality of your life, then I feel complete. As you listen, you will become aware that I use many terms, such as power, intelligence, infinite mind, higher power, God, universal power, inner wisdom, and so on. This is done to show you that there is no limitation on what you choose to call that power that runs the universe and is also within you. If any name disturbs you, then substitute another that feels right for you. This book was written as an extension of You Can Heal Your Life. Time has passed since the writing of that book, and many new ideas have revealed themselves to me. Those ideas I wish to share with all of you who have been writing over the years asking for more information. I feel an important thing to be aware of is that the power we are all seeking out there is also within us and readily available to us to use in positive ways. May this tape reveal to you how very powerful you really are. I am not a healer. I do not heal anyone. I think of myself as a stepping stone on a pathway of self-discovery. I create a space where people can learn how incredibly wonderful they are by teaching them how to love themselves. That's all I do. I'm a person who supports people. I help people take charge of their lives. I help them discover their own power and inner wisdom and strength. I help them get the blocks and the barriers out of the way so they can love themselves no matter what circumstances they happen to be going through. This doesn't mean that we will never have problems, but it is how we react to the problem that makes a tremendous difference. After years of individual counseling with clients and conducting hundreds of workshops and intensive training programs across the country and around the world, I find that there is only one thing that seems to heal every problem, and that is to love yourself. When people start to love themselves more each day, it's amazing how their lives get better. They feel better. They often get the jobs they want. They have the money they need. Their relationships either improve or the negative ones dissolve and new ones begin. It's a very simple premise, loving yourself. I've often been criticized for being too simplistic, and yet I have found that the simple things are usually the most profound. Someone said to me recently, "You gave me the most wonderful gift. You gave me the gift of myself." So many of us hide from ourselves, and we don't even know who we are. We don't know what we feel. We don't know what we want. Life is a voyage of self-discovery. To me, to be enlightened is to go within and to know who and what we really are, and to know that we have the ability to change for the better by loving and taking care of ourselves. It's not selfish to love ourselves. It clears us so that we can love ourselves enough to love other people. We can really help the planet when we come from a space of great love and joy on an individual basis. The power that created this incredible universe has often been referred to as love, and God is love. We have often heard the statement, "Love makes the world go round." It's all true. Love is the binding agent that holds the whole universe together. To me, love is deep appreciation. When I talk about loving ourselves, I mean having a deep appreciation for who we are. We accept all the different parts of ourselves, our little peculiarities, the embarrassments, the things we may not do so well, and all the wonderful qualities too. We accept the whole package with love, unconditionally. Unfortunately, many of us will not love ourselves until we lose the weight, or get the job, or get the raise, or the boyfriend, or whatever. We often put conditions on our love, but we can change. We can love ourselves as we are right now. There is also a lack of love on this planet as a whole. I believe our whole planet has a disease called AIDS, and more people are dying every day. This physical challenge has given us the opportunity to overcome barriers and to go beyond our morality standards and differences of religion and politics and to open our hearts. The more of us who can do it, the quicker we are going to find the answers. We are in the midst of enormous individual and global change. I believe that all of us who are living at this time chose to be here, to be a part of these changes, to bring about change, and to transform the world from the old way of life to a more loving and peaceful existence. In the Piscean Age, we looked out there for our Savior. Save me, please take care of me. Now we are moving into the Aquarian Age, and we are learning to go within to find our Savior. We are the power we have been seeking. We are in charge of our lives. If you are not willing to love yourself today, then you are not going to love yourself tomorrow. Because whatever excuse you have today, you'll still have tomorrow. Maybe you'll have the same excuse 20 years from now, and even leave this lifetime holding on to the same excuse. Today is the day you can love yourself totally with no expectations. I want to help create a world where it is safe for us to love each other, where we can express who we are and be loved and accepted by the people around us without judgment, criticism, or prejudice. Loving begins at home. The Bible says, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." Far too often we forget the last couple of words, "as thyself." We really can't love anyone out there unless the love starts inside us. Self-love is the most important gift we can give ourselves, because when we love who we are, we will not hurt ourselves, and we will not hurt anyone else. With inner peace, there would be no wars, no gangs, no terrorists, and no homeless. There would be no dis-ease, no AIDS, no cancer, no poverty, and no starvation. So this, to me, is a prescription for world peace, to have peace within ourselves. Peace, understanding, compassion, forgiveness, and most of all, love. We have the power within us to affect these changes. Love is something we can choose, the same way we choose anger or hate or sadness. We can choose love. It's always a choice within us. Let's begin right now in this moment to choose love. It's the most powerful healing force there is. The information on this tape, which has been part of my lectures over the past 5 years, is yet another stepping stone on your pathway to self-discovery, an opportunity to know a little bit more about yourself and to understand the potential that is your birthright. You have an opportunity to love yourself more, so you can be a part of an incredible universe of love. Love begins in our hearts, and it begins with us. Let your love contribute to the healing of our planet. Part 1, Becoming Conscious. When we expand our thinking and beliefs, our love flows freely. When we contract, we shut ourselves off. Chapter 1, The Power Within. The more you connect to the power within you, the more you can be free in all areas of your life. Who are you? Why are you here? What are your beliefs about life? For thousands of years, finding the answers to these questions has meant going within. But what does that mean? I believe there is a power within each of us that can lovingly direct us to our perfect health, perfect relationships, perfect careers, and which can bring us prosperity of every kind. In order to have these things, we have to believe first that they are possible. Next, we must be willing to release the patterns in our lives that are creating conditions we say we do not want. We do this by going within and tapping the inner power that already knows what is best for us. If we are willing to turn our lives over to this greater power within us, the power that loves and sustains us, we can create more loving and prosperous lives. I believe that our minds are always connected to the one infinite mind, and therefore all knowledge and wisdom is available to us at any time. We are connected to this infinite mind, this universal power that created us, through that spark of light within, our higher self, or the power within. The universal power loves all of its creations. It is a power for good, and it directs everything in our lives. It doesn't know how to hate or lie or punish. It is pure love, freedom, understanding, and compassion. It is important to turn our lives over to our higher self, because through it we receive our good. We must understand that we have the choice to use this power in any way. If we choose to live in the past and rehash all of the negative situations and conditions that went on way back when, then we stay stuck where we are. If we make a conscious decision not to be victims of the past and go about creating new lives for ourselves, we are supported by this power within, and new, happier experiences begin to unfold. I don't believe in two powers. I think there is one infinite spirit. It's all too easy to say it's the devil or them. It really is only us. And either we use the power we have wisely, or we misuse the power. Do we have the devil in our hearts? Do we condemn others for being different than we are? What are we choosing? Responsibility versus blame. I also believe that we contribute toward the creation of every condition in our lives, good or bad, with our thinking, feeling patterns. The thoughts we think create our feelings, and then we begin to live our lives in accordance with these feelings and beliefs. This is not to blame ourselves for things going wrong in our lives. There is a difference between being responsible and blaming ourselves or others. When I talk about responsibility, I am really talking about having power. Blame is about giving away one's power. Responsibility gives us the power to make changes in our lives. If we play the victim role, then we are using our personal power to be helpless. If we decide to accept responsibility, then we don't waste time blaming somebody or something out there. Some people feel guilty for creating illness or poverty or problems. They choose to interpret responsibility as guilt, and some members of the media like to refer to it as New Age guilt. These people often feel guilty because they believe that they have failed in some way. However, they usually accept everything as a guilt trip in one way or another, because it's another way to make themselves wrong, and that is not what I'm talking about. If we can use our problems and illnesses as opportunities to think about how we can change our lives, we have power. Many people who come through catastrophic illnesses say that it was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to them because it gave them a chance to go about their lives differently. A lot of people, on the other hand, go around saying, "I'm a victim, woe is me, please, doctor, fix me." I think these people will have a difficult time even getting well or handling their problems. Responsibility is our ability to respond to a situation. We always have a choice. It does not mean that we deny who we are and what we have in our lives. It merely means that we can acknowledge that we have contributed to where we are. By taking responsibility, we have the power to change. We can say, "What can I do to make this different?" We need to understand that we all have personal power all the time. It depends on how we use it. Many of us are now realizing that we come from dysfunctional homes. We carry over a lot of negative feelings about who we are and our relationship to life. My childhood was filled with violence, including sexual abuse. I was starved for love and affection and had no self-esteem at all. Even after leaving home at the age of 15, I continued to experience abuse in many forms. I hadn't yet realized that the thinking-feeling patterns I had learned early in life had brought this abuse upon me. Children often respond to the mental atmosphere of the adults around them. So I learned early about fear and abuse and continued to recreate those experiences for myself as I grew up. I certainly didn't understand that I had the power to change all of this. I was unmercifully hard on myself because I interpreted lack of love and affection to mean that I must be a bad person. All of the events you have experienced in your lifetime up to this moment have been created by your thoughts and beliefs from the past. Let's not look back on our lives with shame. Look at the past as part of the richness and fullness of your life. Without this richness and fullness, we would not be here today. There is no reason to beat yourself up because you didn't do better. You did the best you knew how. Release the past in love and be grateful that it has brought you to this new awareness. The past only exists in our minds and in the way we choose to look at it in our minds. This is the moment we are living. This is the moment we are feeling. This is the moment we are experiencing. What we are doing right now is laying the groundwork for tomorrow. So this is the moment to make the decision. We can't do anything tomorrow, and we can't do it yesterday. We can only do it today. What is important is what we are choosing to think, believe, and say right now. When we begin to take conscious charge of our thoughts and words, then we have tools that we can use. I know this sounds simple, but remember, the point of power is always in the present moment. It is important for you to understand that your mind is not in control. You are in control of your mind. The higher self is in control. You can stop thinking those old thoughts. When your old thinking tries to come back and say, "It's so hard to change," take mental command. Say to your mind, "I now choose to believe it is becoming easy for me to make changes. You may have this conversation with your mind several times before it acknowledges that you are in charge and that you really mean what you say. Imagine that your thoughts are like drops of water. One thought or one drop of water does not mean very much. As you continue to repeat the same thoughts over and over, you first notice a stain on the carpet, then there's a little puddle, then a pond, and as these thoughts continue, they can become a lake and finally an ocean. What kind of ocean are you creating? One that is polluted and toxic and unfit to swim in? Or one that is crystal clear and blue and invites you to enjoy its refreshing waters? People often tell me, I can't stop thinking a certain thought. I always reply, yes, you can. Remember how often you have refused to think a positive thought? You just want to tell your mind that that is what you are going to do. You want to make up your mind to stop thinking negatively. I'm not saying that you have to fight your thoughts when you want to change things. When the negative thoughts come up, simply say, thank you for sharing. In that way, you are not denying what is there, and you are not giving your power over to the negative thoughts. Tell yourself that you are not going to buy into the negativity anymore. You want to create another way of thinking. Again, you don't have to fight your thoughts. Acknowledge and go beyond them. Don't drown in a sea of your own negativity when you can float on the ocean of life. You are meant to be a wonderful, loving expression of life. Life is waiting for you to open up to it, to feel worthy of the good it holds for you. The wisdom and intelligence of the universe is yours to use. Life is here to support you. Trust the power within you to be there for you. If you get scared, it is helpful to become aware of your breath as it flows in and out of your body. Your breath, the most precious substance of your life, is freely given to you. You have enough to last for as long as you shall live. You accept this precious substance without even thinking, and yet you doubt that life can supply you with the other necessities. Now is the time for you to learn about your own power and what you are capable of doing. Go within and find out who you are. We all have different opinions. You have a right to yours, and I have a right to mine. No matter what goes on in the world, the only thing you can work on is what is right for you. You want to get in touch with your inner guidance because it is the wisdom that knows the answers for you. It's not easy to listen to yourself when your friends and family are telling you what to do. Yet all the answers to all the questions you are ever going to ask are within you now. And every time you say, I don't know, you shut the door to your own inner wisdom. The messages you get from your higher self are positive and supportive of you. If you start getting negative messages, then you are working from ego and your human mind level, and even perhaps your imagination. Although positive messages often come to us through our imagination and our dreams. Support yourself by making the right choices for you. When in doubt, ask yourself, is this a decision that is loving for me? Is this right for me now? You may make another decision at some later point, a day, a week, or a month later. But ask yourself these questions in each moment. As we learn to love ourselves and trust our higher power, we become co-creators with the infinite spirit of a loving world. Our love for ourselves moves us from being victims to being winners. Our love for ourselves attracts wonderful experiences to us. Have you ever noticed that people who feel good about themselves are naturally attractive? They usually have a quality about them that is just wonderful. They are happy with their lives. Things come to them easily and effortlessly. I learned a long time ago that I am a being of oneness with the presence and power of God. Knowing this, that the wisdom and understanding of Spirit resides within me, and I know that I am, therefore, divinely guided in all my dealings with others. Just as all the stars and planets are in their perfect orbit, I am also in my divine right order. I may not understand everything with my limited human mind. However, on the cosmic level, I know I am in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. My present experience is a stepping stone to new awareness and new opportunities. Who are you? What did you come here to learn? What did you come here to teach? We all have a unique purpose. We are more than our personalities, our problems, our fears, and our illnesses. We are far more than our bodies. We are all connected with everyone on the planet and with all of life. We are all spirit, light, energy, vibration, and love. And we all have the power to live our lives with purpose and meaning. Chapter 2, Following My Inner Voice. The thoughts we choose to think are the tools that we use to paint the canvas of our lives. I remember when I first heard that I could change my life if I was willing to change my thinking. It was quite a revolutionary idea to me. I lived in New York and discovered the Church of Religious Science. Often people confuse the Church of Religious Science, or Science of Mind, which was founded by Ernest Holmes, with the Christian Science Church founded by Mary Baker Eddy. They all reflect new thought, however they are different philosophies. The Science of Mind has ministers and practitioners who carry on the teachings of the Church of Religious Science. They were the very first people who told me that my thoughts shaped my future. Even though I didn't understand what they meant, this concept touched what I call the inner ding within me, that place of intuition that is referred to as the voice within. Over the years, I've learned to follow it, because when that ding goes yes, even if it seems a crazy choice, I know that it is right for me. So these concepts struck a chord in me. Something said, yes, they are right. And then I began the adventure of learning how to change my thinking. Once I accepted the idea and said yes to it, I went through the hows. I read a lot of books, and my home became like many of yours, filled with masses of spiritual and self-help books. I went to classes for many years, and I explored everything related to the subject. I literally immersed myself in new thought philosophy, a new way of thinking. It was the first time that I had really studied in my life. Up until then, I didn't believe in anything. My mother was a lapsed Catholic, and my stepfather was an atheist. I had some strange idea that Christians either wore hair shirts or were eaten by lions, and neither appealed to me. I really delved into Science of Mind, because that was an avenue that was open for me at the time, and I found it really wonderful. At first, it was sort of easy. I grasped a few concepts, and I started to think and talk a little bit differently. In those days, I was a constant complainer and full of self-pity. I just loved to wallow in the pits. I didn't know that I was continually perpetuating more experiences in which to pity myself. But then again, I didn't know any better in those days. Gradually, I found that I was no longer complaining quite so much. I started to listen to what I said. I became aware of my self-criticism, and I tried to stop it. I began to babble affirmations without quite knowing what they meant. I started with the easy ones, of course, and a few small changes began to take place. I got the green lights and the parking places, and boy, did I think I was hot stuff. Wow, I thought I knew it all, and I very soon became quite cocky and arrogant and dogmatic in my beliefs. I felt I knew all the answers. In hindsight, it was really my way of feeling safe in this new area. When we start to move away from some of our old rigid beliefs, especially if we've been previously in total control, it can be very scary. It was very frightening for me, so I would grasp onto whatever would make me feel safe. It was a beginning for me, and I still had a long way to go. And I still do. Like most of us, I didn't always find the pathway easy and smooth, because just babbling affirmations didn't work all the time, and I couldn't understand why. I asked myself, what am I doing wrong? See, immediately I blamed myself. Was this one more example of me not being good enough? That was a favorite old belief of mine. At the time, my teacher, Eric Pace, would look at me and refer to the idea of resentment. I didn't have the faintest idea what he was talking about. Resentment? Me? Surely I didn't have any resentments. After all, I was on my pathway. I was spiritually perfect. How little I could see myself then. I continued doing the best I could in my life. I studied metaphysics and spirituality and learned about myself as much as possible. I grasped what I could, and sometimes I applied it. Often we hear a lot of things, and sometimes we grasp them, but we don't always practice them. Time seemed to go by very quickly, and at that point I had been studying science of mind for about 3 years and had just become a practitioner of the church. I began to teach the philosophy, but I wondered why my students seemed to be floundering. I couldn't understand why they were so stuck in their problems. I gave them so much good advice. Why weren't they using it and getting well? It never dawned on me that I was speaking the truth more than I was living it. I was like a parent who tells the child what to do, but then does exactly the opposite. Then one day, seemingly out of the blue, I was diagnosed with vaginal cancer. First, I panicked like anyone else. Then I had doubts that all this stuff I was learning was valid. It was a normal and natural reaction. I thought to myself, if I was clear and centered, I wouldn't have the need to create the illness. In hindsight, I think when I was diagnosed, I felt safe enough at that point to let the illness surface so that I could do something about it, rather than having it be another hidden secret that I wouldn't know about until I was dead. I knew too much by then to hide from myself any longer. I knew that cancer was a disease of resentment that is held for a long time until it eats away at the body. When we stifle our emotions inside of us, they have to go somewhere in the body. If we spend a lifetime stuffing things down, they will eventually manifest somewhere in the body. I became very aware that the resentment within me, which my teacher had referred to so many times, had to do with being a physically, emotionally, and sexually abused as a child. Naturally, I would have resentment. I was bitter and unforgiving of the past. I had never done any work to change or release the bitterness and let it go. When I left home, it was all I could do to forget what had happened to me. I thought I had put it behind me, when in actuality I had simply buried it. When I found my metaphysical pathway, I covered up my feelings with a nice layer of spirituality and hid a lot of garbage inside me. I put a wall around myself that kept me literally out of touch with my own feelings. I didn't know who I was or where I was. After my diagnosis, the real inner work of learning to know myself began. thank God I had tools to use. I knew I needed to go within myself if I was going to make any permanent changes. Yes, the doctor could give me an operation and perhaps take care of my illness for the moment. But if I didn't change the way I was using my thoughts and my words, I'd probably recreate it again. It's always interesting to me to learn where in our bodies we put our cancers, our diseases, on which side of the body, the left or the right. The right side represents the masculine side, from where we give out. The left is the feminine side, the receptive part, from where we take in. Almost all of my life, when anything went wrong, it was always on the right side of my body. It was where I stored all the resentment towards my stepfather and life. I was no longer content to get green lights and parking places. I knew I had to go much, much deeper. I realized that I was not really progressing in my life the way I wanted to because I hadn't really cleared out this old garbage from childhood, and I wasn't living what I was teaching. I had to recognize the inner child inside me and work with her. My inner child needed help because she was still in great pain. I quickly began a self-healing program in earnest. I concentrated totally on me and did little else. I became very committed to getting well. Some of it was a little weird, yet I did it anyway. After all, this was my life on the line. It became almost a 24-hour-a-day job for the next 6 months. I began reading and studying everything I could find out about alternative ways to heal cancer because I truly believed it could be done. I did a nutritional cleansing program that detoxified my body from all the junk foods I had eaten for years. For months, I seemed to be living on sprouts and pureed asparagus. I know I had more to eat, but that is what I remember the most. I worked with my Science of Mind minister and teacher, Eric Pace, to clear the mental patterns so the cancer wouldn't return. I said affirmations and did visualizations, prayers, and spiritual mind treatments. I did daily sessions in front of a mirror. The most difficult words to say were, "I love you. I really love you." It took a lot of tears and a lot of breathing to get through it. When I did, it was as if I took a quantum leap. I also went to a good psychotherapist who was skilled in helping people express and release their anger. I spent a long period of time beating pillows and screaming. It was wonderful. It felt so good because I had never, ever had permission to do that in my life. I don't know which method worked. Maybe a little bit of everything worked. Most of all, I was really consistent with what I did. I practiced during all my waking hours. I thanked myself before I went to sleep for what I had done during the day. I affirmed that my healing process was taking place in my body while I slept, and that I would awaken in the morning bright and refreshed and feeling good. In the morning, I'd awaken and thank myself and my body for the work that was done during the night. I would affirm that I was willing to grow and learn each day and make changes without seeing myself as a bad person. I also worked on understanding and forgiveness. One of the ways was to explore my parents' childhoods as much as I could. I began to understand how they were treated as children, and I realized that because of the way they were brought up, they couldn't really have done anything differently than they did. My stepfather was abused at home, and he continued this abuse with his children. My mother was brought up to believe that the man was always right, and you stood by and let him do what he wanted. No one taught them a different approach. It was their way of life. Step by step, my growing understanding of them enabled me to start the forgiveness process. The more I forgave my parents, the more willing I was to forgive myself. Forgiveness of ourselves is enormously important. Many of us do the same damage to the inner child that our parents did to us. We just continue the abuse, and it's very sad. When we were children and the other people mistreated us, we didn't have many options. But when we grow up and we still mistreat the inner child, it's disastrous. As I forgave myself, I began to trust myself. I found that when we don't trust life or other people, it's really because we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust our higher selves to take care of us in all situations. So we say, I'll never fall in love again because I don't want to get hurt, or I'll never let this happen again. We are really saying to ourselves, I don't trust you enough to take good care of me, so I'm going to stay away from everything. Eventually, I began to trust myself enough to take care of me, and I found it easier and easier to love myself once I trusted myself. My body was healing, and my heart was healing. My real spiritual growth had come in such an unexpected way. As a bonus, I began to look younger. The clients I now attracted were almost all people who were willing to work on themselves. They made enormous progress without me really doing anything. They could sense and feel that I was living the concepts I was teaching, and it was easy for them to accept these ideas. Of course they had positive results. They began to improve the quality of their lives. Once we began to make peace with ourselves on the inner level, life seems to flow much more pleasantly. So what did this experience teach me personally? I realized that I had the power to change my life if I was willing to change my thinking and release the patterns that kept me living in the past. This experience gave me the inner knowledge that if we are willing, really willing to do the work, the mental work, we can make incredible changes in our minds, our bodies, and our lives. No matter where you are in life, no matter what you've contributed to creating, no matter what's happening, you are always doing the best you can with the understanding and awareness and knowledge that you have. And when you know more, you will do it differently, as I did. Don't berate yourself for where you are. Don't blame yourself for not doing it faster or better. Say to yourself, I'm doing the best I can. And even though I'm in a mess now, I will get out of it somehow. So let's find the best way to do it. If all you do is tell yourself that you're stupid and no good, then you stay stuck. You need your own loving support if you want to make changes. The methods I use are not my methods. Most of them I learned at Science of Mind, which is what I basically teach. Yet these principles are as old as time. If you read any of the old spiritual teachings, you will find the same messages. I am trained as a minister of the Church of Religious Science. However, I do not have a church. I am a free spirit. I express the teachings in simple language so that they may reach many people. This path is a wonderful way of getting your head together and really understanding what life is all about and how you can use your own mind to take charge of your life. When I started all this over 20 years ago, I had no idea that I would be able to bring hope and help to the number of people that I do today. Chapter 3. The Power of Your Spoken Word. Every day, declare for yourself what you want in life. Declare it as though you have it. The Law of Mind. There is a law of gravity, and there are several other physical laws, like physics and electricity, most of which I don't understand. There are also spiritual laws, like the law of cause and effect. What you give out comes back. There is also a law of mind. I don't know how it works, in much the same way that I don't know how electricity works. I only know that when I flick the switch, the light comes on. I believe that when we think a thought, or when we speak a word or a sentence, It somehow goes out from us into a law of mind and comes back to us as experience. We are now beginning to learn the correlation between the mental and the physical. We are beginning to understand how the mind works and that our thoughts are creative. Our thoughts speed through our minds very quickly, so it is difficult to shape them at first. Our mouths, on the other hand, are slower. So if we can start editing our speech by listening to what we say and not letting negative things come out of our mouths, then we can begin to shape and control our thoughts. There is tremendous power in our spoken words, and many of us are not aware just how important they are. Let us consider words as the foundation of what we continually create in our lives. We use words all the time, yet we babble away, seldom thinking about what we are truly saying or how we are saying it. We pay very little attention to the selection of our words. In fact, most of us speak in negatives. As children, we were taught grammar. We were taught to select words according to these rules of grammar. However, I have always found that the rules of grammar continually change, and what was improper at one time is proper at another time, or vice versa. What was slang in the past is considered common usage in the present. However, grammar does not take into consideration the meaning of words and how they affect our lives. On the other hand, I was not taught in school that my choice of words would have anything to do with what I would experience in life. No one taught me that my thoughts were creative or that they could literally shape my life. Nobody taught me that what I gave out in the form of words would return to me as experiences. The purpose of the Golden Rule was to show us a very basic law of life: do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or what you give out comes back to you. It was never meant to cause guilt. No one ever taught me that I was worth loving or that I deserved good, and nobody taught me that life was here to support me. I remember that as children, we would often call each other cruel and hurtful names and try to belittle one another. But why did we do that? Where did we learn such behavior? Look at what we were taught. Many of us were told repeatedly by our parents or teachers that we were stupid or dumb or lazy. We were a nuisance and not good enough. Sometimes we heard our parents say that they wished we had never been born. Maybe we cringed when we heard these words, but little did we realize how deeply embedded the hurt and pain would become. Changing our self-talk. Too often we accepted the early messages that our parents gave us. We heard, "Eat your spinach, clean your room, or make your bed," in order to be loved. You got the idea that you were only acceptable if you did certain things, that acceptance and love were conditional. However, that was according to somebody's idea of what was worthwhile, and had nothing to do with your deep inner self-worth. You got the idea that you could only exist if you did these things to please others. Otherwise, you did not have permission to even exist. These early messages contribute to what I call our self-talk, the way we talk to ourselves. The way we talk to ourselves inwardly is really important because it becomes the basis of our spoken words. It sets up the mental atmosphere in which we operate and which attracts to us our experiences. If we belittle ourselves, life is going to mean very little to us. If we love and appreciate ourselves, then life can be a wonderful, joyous gift. If our lives are unhappy, or if we are feeling unfulfilled, it's very easy to blame our parents or them and say it's all their fault. However, if we do, we stay stuck in our conditions, our problems, and our frustrations. Words of blame will not bring us freedom. Remember, there is a power in our words. Again, Our power comes from taking responsibility for our lives. I know it sounds scary to be responsible for our lives, but we really are, whether we accept it or not. If we want to be responsible for our lives, we've got to be responsible for our mouths. The words and phrases we say are only extensions of our thoughts. Start to listen to what you say. If you hear yourself using negative or limiting words, change them. If I hear a negative story, I don't go around repeating it to everyone. I think it has gone far enough, and I let it go. If I hear a positive story, however, I will tell everyone. When you are out with other people, begin to listen to what they say and how they say it. See if you can connect what they say with what they are experiencing in life. Many, many people live their lives in shoulds. Should is a word that my ear is very attuned to. It is as if a bell goes off every time I hear it. Often I will hear people use a dozen shoulds in a paragraph. These same people wonder why their lives are so rigid or why they can't move out of a situation. They want a lot of control over things that they cannot control. They are either making themselves wrong or making someone else wrong. And then they question why they aren't living lives of freedom. We can also remove the expression have to from our vocabulary and our thinking as well. When we do, we will release a lot of self-imposed pressure on ourselves. We create tremendous pressure by saying, I have to go to work, I have to do this, I have to, I have to. Instead, let's begin to say choose to. I choose to go to work because it pays the rent right now or whatever. Come from choice. Choose to puts a whole different perspective on our lives. Everything we do is by choice, even though it may not seem to be so. A lot of us also use the word but. We make statements, then we say but, which heads us in two different directions. We give conflicting messages to ourselves. Listen to how you use the word but the next time you speak. Another expression we could be mindful of is don't forget. We are so used to saying don't forget this or that, and what happens? We forget. We really want to remember, and instead we forget. So we can begin to use the phrase, please remember, in place of don't forget, or I will always remember, instead of I will never forget. When you wake up in the morning, do you curse the fact that you have to go to work? Do you complain about the weather? Do you grumble that your back or your head hurts? What is the second and third thing you think or say? Do you yell at the children to get up? Most people say more or less the same thing every morning. How does what you say start your day? Is it positive and cheerful and wonderful? Or is it whining and condemning? If you grumble and complain and moan, you're setting yourself up for just such a day. What are your last thoughts before going to bed? Are they powerful, healing thoughts? Or poverty worry thoughts. When I speak of poverty thoughts, I don't mean only about the lack of money. It can be a negative way of thinking about anything in your life, any part of your life that is not flowing freely. Do you worry about tomorrow? Usually, I will read something positive before I go to sleep. I am aware that when I sleep, I am doing a lot of clearing that will prepare me for the next day. I find it very helpful to turn over to my dreams any problems or questions I may have. I know my dreams will help me take care of whatever is going on in my life. I am the only person who can think in my mind, just like you are the only person who can think in your mind. Nobody can force us to think in a different way. We choose our thoughts, and these are the basis for our self-talk. As I experienced how this process worked more in my life, I began to live more of what I was teaching others. I really watched my words and my thoughts, and I constantly forgave myself for not being perfect. I allowed myself to be me, rather than struggling to be a super person who may only be acceptable in others' eyes. When I began for the first time to trust life and to see it as a friendly place, I lightened up. My humor became less biting and more truly funny. I worked on releasing criticism and judgment of myself and other people. And I stopped telling disaster stories. We are so quick to spread bad news. It's just amazing. I stopped reading the newspaper and gave up the 11 o'clock news at night because all the reports were concerned with disaster and violence and very little good news. I realized that most people don't want to hear good news. They love to hear bad news so that they have something to complain about. Too many of us keep recycling the negative stories until we believe that there is only bad in the world. For a while, there was a radio station that broadcast only good news, but it went out of business. When I had my cancer, I decided to stop gossiping, and to my surprise, I found I had nothing to say to anyone. I became aware that whenever I met a friend, I would immediately dish the latest dirt with them. Eventually, I discovered there were other ways of talking, although it wasn't an easy habit to break. Nonetheless, if I gossiped about other people, then other people probably gossiped about me, because what we give out, we get back. As I worked more and more with people, I really began to listen to what they said. I really began to hear the words, not just get the general drift. Usually after 10 minutes with a new client, I could tell exactly why they had a problem, because I could hear the words they were using. I could understand them by the way they were talking. I knew that their words were contributing to their problems. If they were talking negatively, imagine what their self-talk was like. It must be more of the same negative programming, poverty thinking, as I called it. A little exercise I suggest you do is to put a tape recorder by your telephone, and every time you make or get a call, push the record button. When the tape is full on both sides, listen to what you've been saying and how you say it. You will probably be amazed. You will begin to hear the words you use and the inflection of your voice. You will begin to become aware. If you find yourself saying something 3 times or more, write it down because it is a pattern. Some of the patterns may be positive and supportive, and you may also have some very negative patterns that you repeat over and over and over again. The power of the subconscious mind. In light of what I've been speaking of, I want to discuss the power of our subconscious minds. Our subconscious minds make no judgments. The subconscious mind accepts everything we say and creates according to our beliefs. It always says yes. Our subconscious minds love us enough to give us what we declare. We have choice, though. If we choose these poverty beliefs and concepts, then it is assumed that we want them. It will continue to give us these things until we are willing to change our thoughts and words and beliefs for the better. We are never stuck because we can always choose again. There are billions and billions of thoughts from which to choose. Our subconscious minds don't know true from false or right from wrong. We don't want to deprecate ourselves in any way. We don't want to say something like, "Oh, stupid old me," because the subconscious mind will pick up this self-talk, and after a while you will feel that way. If you say it enough times, it will become a belief in your subconscious. The subconscious mind has no sense of humor, and it is important for you to know and understand this concept. You cannot make a joke about yourself and think it doesn't mean anything. If it is a put-down about yourself, even if you're trying to be cute or funny about it, the subconscious mind accepts it as true. I don't let people tell put-down jokes in my workshops. They can be raunchy, but not put-downs of a nationality or sex or whatever. So don't joke about yourself and make derogatory remarks about yourself. because they will not create good experiences for you. Don't belittle others either. The subconscious mind doesn't distinguish between you and the other person. It hears the words, and it believes you are talking about yourself. The next time you want to criticize someone, ask why you feel that way about yourself. You only see in others what you see in yourself. Instead of criticizing others, praise them, and within a month, you will see enormous change within you. Our words are really a matter of approach and attitude. Notice the way that lonely, unhappy, poor, sick people talk. What words do they use? What have they accepted as the truth for themselves? How do they describe themselves? How do they describe their work, their lives, their relationships? What do they look forward to? Be aware of their words, but please, don't run around telling strangers that they are ruining their lives by the way they talk. Don't do it to your family and friends either, because the information will not be appreciated. Instead, use this information to begin to make the connection for yourself and practice it if you want your life to change. Because even on the smallest level, if you change the way you talk, your experiences are going to change. If you are a person with an illness who believes that it is fatal and that you're going to die and that life is no good because nothing ever works for you, then guess what? You can choose to release your negative concept of life. Start affirming for yourself that you are a person who is lovable and that you are worth healing and that you attract everything you need on the physical level to contribute to your healing. Know that you are willing to get well and that it is safe for you to get well. Many people only feel safe when they are sick. They are usually the kind that have difficulty saying the word no. The only way they can say no is by saying, I'm too sick to do it. It's a perfect excuse. I remember a woman at one of my workshops who had 3 cancer operations. She couldn't say no to anybody. Her father was a doctor, and she was Daddy's good little girl, so whatever Daddy told her to do, she did. It was impossible for her to say no. No matter what you asked her, she had to say yes. It took 4 days to get her to literally shriek no at the top of her lungs. I had her do it while shaking her fist. No, no, no. And once she got into it, she loved it. I find that many women with breast cancer can't say no. They nourish everybody except themselves. One of the things I recommend to a woman with breast cancer is that she must learn to say no. No, I don't want to do it. No. 2 or 3 months of saying no to everything and everyone will begin to turn things around. She needs to nourish herself by saying, this is what I want to do, not what you want me to do. When I used to work with clients privately, I would hear them argue on behalf of their limitations, and they would always want me to know why they were stuck because of one reason or another. If we believe we are stuck and accept that we are stuck, then we are stuck. We get stuck because our negative beliefs are being fulfilled. Instead, let's begin to focus on our strengths. Many of you tell me that my tape saved your lives. I want you to realize that no book or tape is going to save you. A little piece of tape in a plastic box is not saving your life. What you are doing with the information is what matters. I can give you plenty of ideas, yet what you do with them is going to count. I suggest that you listen to a particular tape over and over again for a month or more so that the ideas become a new habit pattern. I'm not your healer or savior. The only person who's going to make a change in your life is you. Now, what are the messages you want to hear? I know I say this over and over again. Loving yourself is the most important thing you can do, because when you love yourself, you're not going to hurt yourself or anyone else. It's my prescription for world peace. If I don't hurt me and I don't hurt you, how can we have war? The more of us who can get to that place, the better the planet will be. Let's begin to be conscious of what is going on by listening to the words we speak to ourselves and to others. Then we can begin to make the changes that will help heal ourselves as well as the rest of the planet. Chapter 4. Reprogramming Old Tapes. Be willing to take the first step, no matter how small it is. Concentrate on the fact that you are willing to learn. Absolute miracles will happen. Affirmations do work. Now that we understand a little bit more about how powerful our thoughts and words are, we can choose to retrain our thinking and speaking into positive patterns if we're going to get beneficial results. Are you willing to change your self-talk into positive affirmations? Remember, every time you think a thought and every time you speak a word, you are saying an affirmation. An affirmation is a beginning point. It opens the way to change. In essence, you are saying to your subconscious mind, I am taking responsibility. I am aware that there is something I can do to change. When I talk about doing affirmations, I mean to consciously choose sentences or words that will either help to eliminate something from your life or help to create something new in your life. And you do this in a positive way. If you say, I don't want to be sick anymore, the subconscious mind hears sick more. Now you want to tell it clearly what you do want. That is, say, I am a healthy person. I radiate good health. The subconscious mind is very straightforward. It has no strategy or designs. What it hears is what it does. If you say, I hate this car, it doesn't give you a wonderful new car because it doesn't know what you want. Even if you get a new car, you will probably hate it soon because that is what you've been saying about it. The subconscious only hears, hate this car. You need to clearly declare your desires in a positive way, as in, I have a beautiful new car that suits all my needs, or I always have a car that I love. If there is something in your life that you really dislike, I have found one of the quickest ways to release it is to bless it with love. I bless you with love, and I release you and let you go. This works for people, situations, objects, and living quarters. You could even try it on a habit you would like to be free of and see what happens. I knew one man who said, I bless you with love and release you from my life to every cigarette he smoked. After a few days, his desire for smoking was considerably less, and in a few weeks the habit was gone. You deserve good. Think for a moment. What is it you really want right now? What is it you want today in your life? Think about it, and then say, I accept for myself whatever it is that you want. This is where I find that most of us get stuck. The bottom line is the belief that we don't deserve to have what we want. Our personal power lies in the way we perceive our deservability. Our not deserving comes from childhood messages. Again, we don't have to feel that we cannot change because of these messages. Often people will come to me and say, Louise, affirmations don't work. It really has nothing to do with affirmations. It is the fact that we don't believe we deserve the good. The way to find out if you believe that you deserve something is to say an affirmation and notice the thoughts that come up as you say it. Then write them down, because when you see these thoughts on paper, they will be very clear to you. The only thing that keeps you from deserving or loving yourself or whatever is someone else's belief or opinion that you have accepted as truth. When we don't believe that we deserve good, we will knock the pinnings out from under ourselves, which we can do in a variety of ways. We can create chaos, we can lose things, we can hurt ourselves, or have physical problems like falling, or have accidents. We want to start believing that we deserve all the good that life has to offer. In order to reprogram the false or negative belief, what would be the first thought that you would need to begin to create this new whatever in your life? what would be the building block or the foundation that you would need to stand on? What would be the sort of thing that you would need to know for yourself, to believe, to accept? Some good thoughts to start with could be, I am worthwhile. I am deserving. I love myself. I allow myself to be fulfilled, etc. These concepts form the very basis of beliefs on which you can build. Do your affirmations on top of these building blocks to create what you want. Whenever I speak somewhere, someone will come up to me at the end of the lecture or will write me a letter and tell me that he or she has had a healing take place while they were in the room. Sometimes it's very minor, and sometimes it's quite dramatic. A woman came up to me once and told me that she had had a lump in her breast, and it literally disappeared during the lecture. She heard something, and she decided to let something go. This is a good example of how powerful we are. When we are not ready to let something go, when we really want to hold on to something, because it's serving us in some way, it doesn't matter what we do, it probably won't work. However, when we are ready to let it go, as this woman was, it's amazing how the smallest circumstance can help us release it. If you still have a habit that you haven't released, ask yourself how it serves you. What do you get out of it? If you can't get an answer, ask in a different way. If I no longer had this habit, what would happen? Very often the answer is, my life would be better. So it comes back to the fact that we believe we don't deserve a better life in some way. Ordering from the cosmic kitchen. When you first say an affirmation, it may not seem true. But remember, affirmations are like planting seeds in the ground. When you put a seed in the ground, you don't get a full-grown plant the next day. We need to be patient during the growing season. As you continue to say the affirmation, either you will be ready to release whatever you don't want, and the affirmation will become true, or it will open a new avenue to you, or you may get a brilliant brainstorm, or a friend may call you and say, have you tried this? You will be led to the next step that will help you. Keep your affirmations in the present tense. You can sing them and make a jingle out of them so that they repeat over and over in your head. Remember that you cannot affect a specific person's actions with your affirmations. To affirm that John is now in love with me is a form of manipulation, and it is trying to have control over another person's life. It will usually have a boomerang effect on you. You will become very unhappy when you don't get what you want. You can say, I am now loved by a wonderful man who is, and list the qualities that you want in the relationship. That way you allow the power within you to bring to you the perfect person to fill that bill, who may possibly be John. You don't know what another person's spiritual lesson is, and you don't have a right to interfere in their life process. You certainly wouldn't want someone else doing it to you. If someone is ill, bless them and send them love and peace, but don't demand that they get well. I like to think of doing affirmations as placing our order in the cosmic kitchen. If you go to a restaurant and the waiter or waitress comes and takes your order, you don't follow them into the kitchen to see if the chef got the order or how he's going to prepare the food. You sit and drink water or coffee or tea, or you talk to your friend and maybe eat your roll. You assume that your food is being prepared and will be out when it's ready. It's the same when we begin to do affirmations. When we put our order into the cosmic kitchen, the great chef, our higher power, is working on it. So you go on with your life and know that it is being taken care of. It's on order. It's happening. Now, if the food comes out and it isn't exactly what you ordered, and if you have self-esteem, you will send it back. If not, you will eat it. You also have a right to do that with the cosmic kitchen. If you don't get exactly what you want, you can say, no, that's not quite it. This is what I want. Perhaps you weren't clear in your ordering. The idea here, too, is to let go. At the end of my treatments and meditations, I use the words, "And so it is." It's a way of saying, "Higher power, it's in your hands now. I release it to you." Reprogramming the subconscious mind. The thoughts we think accumulate, and when we are unaware, the old thought resurfaces. When we are reprogramming our minds, it is normal and natural that we go a little forward, we come a little back, and we go a little forward again. It's part of practicing. I don't think there is any new skill that you can learn absolutely 100% in the first few minutes. Do you remember when you first learned how to use a computer, how frustrating it was? It took practice. You had to learn how it worked, to learn its laws and systems. I called my first computer my magic lady, for when I mastered her rules, she did indeed deliver what seemed like magic to me. Yet while I was learning, the way she would teach me I was off track or going in the wrong direction was to devour pages of work that I would then have to do all over again. Out of all the mistakes, I learned how to flow with the system. To flow with the system of life, you want to become aware that your subconscious mind is like a computer. Garbage in, garbage out. If you put negative thoughts in, then negative experiences come out. Yes, it takes time and practice to learn the new ways of thinking. Be patient with yourself. When you are learning something new and the old pattern returns, are you going to say, "Oh, I didn't learn anything"? Or are you going to say, "Okay, that's all right, come on, let's do it again the new way"? Or say you cleared an issue and think you'll never have to deal with it again. How do you know if you've really worked it through unless you test yourself? So you bring up the old situation one more time and watch how you react. If you jump right back into the old way of reacting to it, then you know you haven't really learned that particular lesson, and you need to do more work on it. That's all it means. You want to realize it's only a little test to see how far you've come. If you begin to repeat your affirmations, the new statements of truth about yourself, you give yourself an opportunity to react differently. Whether it's a health problem, a financial one, or a relationship difficulty, if you react in a new way to the situation, then you're on your way to having another issue handled, and you can move on to other areas. Remember, too, that we work on layers at a time. You can reach a plateau and think, "I've done it," and then later on some old issue resurfaces and you may injure yourself or get sick and you don't get better for some time. Look to see what the underlying beliefs are. It may mean that you have some more work to do because you are going to the next deeper layer. Don't feel that you're not good enough because something you've worked to clear comes up again. When I discovered that I was not a bad person because once again I was facing an old issue, it became much easier for me to keep going. I learned to say to myself, "Louise, you're doing very well. Look how far you have come. You just need more practice. And I love you."